KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Crema Bakery, located at 2728 Southeast Ankeny Street, serving morning pastries, coffee, teas, cakes, sandwiches, and soups. Lunch was provided by Little River Cafe, located at 0315 Southwest Montgomery Street, serving breakfast, sandwiches, salads, and burgers along the Willamette River. Dinner was provided by Atlas Pizza, located at 3570 Southeast Division Street, a locally owned neighborhood joint offering pizza, pinball, and cold beer since the spring of 2014.
Captain's log, stardate 90.7. We're cruising near the PDX system, searching for new forms of media. The crew is agitated because they're bored with top 40 music and nationally syndicated programming. They crave local content.
Captain, we're picking up a signal. According to the scanner, it's from a community radio station.
Are they advanced life forms?
They're culturally advanced, but still use a primitive monetary system.
Do they require assistance?
Affirmative. They need new members during their membership drive.
Set a course to intersect and inform the crew of this KBOO membership drive. Set phasers to donate.
Aye, Captain.
Tune in Saturday, February 14th for our membership drive Bluegrass Marathon. From 9 to 5, we'll have bluegrass music and live performances by New Blue, The New 5 Cents, Holler Bodies, Mountain Honey, The Puddle Town Ramblers, and String Style, all playing live in studio. That's Saturday, February 14th, from 9 to 5, 8 hours of bluegrass music here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Thank you.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the parents of aid worker Kayla Mueller confirmed she was killed in an airstrike in Syria last week.
A program to help Oregon prison inmates is being cut from the state budget.
And the Oregon legislature may block Common Core education requirements.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 10th, 2015. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Nicole Weinstock.
And I'm Jared Dantzler. Gun advocates openly carried semi-automatic rifles at a rally outside the Oregon Capitol yesterday. This so-called Patriot Rally was organized by the Heirs of Patrick Henry, Northwest, in protest of anticipated gun control legislation. Heirs members fear the reintroduction of legislation extending background checks to almost all private gun sales. Heirs member and gun advocate B.J. Soper said, "We're out here to reassure people that there are Americans still willing to stand up for their rights and liberties." Soper wore full camouflage. He carried a semi-automatic rifle, 6 magazines of ammunition, and a large knife. Weapons on display varied from protester to protester, including toy guns carried by 2 children accompanying their parents. According to a recent poll by the Americans for Responsible Solutions, 87% of Oregonian voters and 83% of state gun owners support background checks on all gun purchases.
The parents of a U.S. citizen who was killed by a U.S. airstrike in Syria today confirmed their daughter's death. Kayla Mueller was being held as a hostage by the so-called Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, known in Arabic by their acronym Daesh. A U.S. airstrike on a position held by Daesh in Syria this past weekend ended with the death of the hostage. Mueller had been an aid worker in the Middle East for years before she went to Syria to help at a hospital in Aleppo. In Palestine, she worked with the nonviolent movement to oppose the demolition of Palestinian homes and takeover of land by Israeli forces. Abdullah Abu Rahma, coordinator of the Popular Committee in the village of Bilin, where Kayla joined the protests, said that Kayla came to Palestine to stand in solidarity with the Palestinians. For this, he said, Kayla will always live in their hearts. He said, the Palestinians will continue, like Kayla, to work against injustice wherever it is. A new bill introduced in the Oregon State Legislature may change the way schools teach and test students. Under current law, schools are required to meet Common Core curriculum, which has been the center of debate among educators and parents. Common Core was adopted in 2009 and was intended to create a national baseline standard for schools across the country. Some have criticized the standards for not having any emphasis on music, art, or computer sciences. Many critics also point out that the Common Core does not leave room in the class for local culture and differences in learning styles. Here's a clip from today's committee hearing in Salem with a representative from the Department of Education and then a state senator speaking on the issue.
In Oregon, the assessment window is open from January through June. On our old assessment system, or really maybe even October through June, where students were able to take multiple assessments on the Oaks. So I could take the reading assessment in October, I could take it again in January, and I could take it again in May if I wanted to. That actually, I think, was a very poor idea. People began to use the assessments inappropriately, trying to measure growth over the course of 1 year, and students took a single assessment as many as three different times. And so as we're moving to our new assessment, the Smarter Balanced Assessment, students will be able to take it once, and the test window is between March and June 12th. So March 1st and June 12th. So we're about to begin that. And I think that that's a really important consideration as we look at that.
Assessment should never be used to judge one kid against another, and that you have to be able to acknowledge the kids came the way they were, and that our goal is to help them make choices in their life that will give them more choices in the future. And I think sometimes, you know, I had some successes. I had a lot of failures as a high school math teacher with kids. I had a couple kids who exemplify the confidence. They couldn't do any math problems, but they were really liked math, and they were really confident, and eventually they got really good at it. But they never lost hope or never thought that they were defined by a test or an opportunity. And I think we get so hung up on the assessment system that we all get uptight about it, and that makes the kids more uptight. And I will tell you one thing that I know, and that is, if I'm an uptight person trying to learn, I don't do very well.
Right.
I think we've hurt a lot of kids over the last number of years, personally, with making so much about the outcomes of these tests, that they start judging themselves because these adults have judged them, so they start making those same assessments about themselves. And when you post anything on the board that indicates a list of how kids are doing or whatever, or anywhere it gets listed, they start doing exactly that, because we are a competitive society, and they compare themselves all the time, and that really hurts the next place. So I hope we continue to have that conversation and figure out how to move ourselves forward as a state.
That was testimony from today's hearing in Salem. The new bill would make sure that no Oregon school district is penalized for altering the curriculum. If passed, the bill will go into effect July 1st.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening, so now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Lisa and Adam to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, please start by calling now at 877-500-5266. Make a pledge to KBOO, 877-500-5266. If you're online, you get a fancy gadget phone, tablet thingy, you can go to kboo.fm, that's kboo.fm, and there's a cute little digital donation jar. That's what I like personally. I love the logo that we use on there. And by the way, it's by contributing to KBOO that we can have cool things like that. And in context of the new logo, we have that on a new hoodie that's offered as well for donations. So there is a really cool hoodie with the new logo. We got KBOO mugs. We have an audio flash drive. You know, you can call in, ask for some different tickets. We got lots of cool tickets as well. Aside from just getting something cool out of it, well, you're always going to get something cool out of it, I'll put it that way, because either way, you're sustaining KBOO, and that's what matters. So again, the number is 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. The phones are off the hook. They're literally running off the hook right now, because you are calling in and you are donating to us. You're helping us out. You're helping sustain all the sexy voices that you're hearing, whether it's Democracy Now! Or these folks doing the news tonight. There are some great voices and personalities and a lot of great work that goes into this stuff, too. People that are doing the KBOO news, you know, they're doing research, you know, not just because they're going to the typical websites you think of. Some of these people are in the community doing this work, learning about these issues, you know, and researching this stuff, putting it into their programs. So there's a lot of kind of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into all the work here at KBOO. And it's only with your help that we can keep doing it and stuff. So the number again is 877-500-5266. Lisa, what do you think?
You know what? In the next longer pledge break, when we get to come back here and chat with you, I want to talk a little bit more about how groundbreaking was KBOO's investigative project around the American Legislative Exchange Council, and which had every bit of impact on our live election night coverage, which, you know, last November was, that was an interesting night. So, but anyway, 877-500-5266. We love it when people come in person. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th in Portland, Oregon. And come in person. I know someone's going to be bringing pizza soon. And just empty out your wallet on the table. I mean, we're just at this place where we're just passing the hat for the radio station. So put your money where your mouth is. Put your money where your mind is, actually. And I also... Adam, I mean, the other thing that really strikes me about KBOO News is this is a real training ground for real journalists that go out across the world. Emily Harris, who's NPR's Jerusalem correspondent, actually started here at KBOO. And I could list a whole bunch of people on the air now, people in other places. But you get the idea. And so in my mind, when you call 877-500-5266, you make a contribution, you're actually changing your community now and for the next generation to come, and in ways that impact you and impact other people as well. So 877-500-5266. If you come in person to 20 Southeast 8th, you can figure out how to be a volunteer yourself, because this is do-it-yourself radio. So I think, are we almost ready to go back to the news? Okay. Back to the news, and thanks for the people who've called.
Another program that helps inmates in Oregon has been cut from the state budget. KBOO's Karen James has more.
The Family Preservation Project is a holistic, evidence-based program that helps incarcerated women reunite with their children, learn parenting skills, and reconcile with their families. After the film, Jessica Katz, founder of the Family Preservation Project, announced that the Oregon Department of Corrections will no longer fund the project at Coffee Creek.
So, effective February 27th, the project will come to a close. Today was the last formal visit between just the mothers and their children, and we'll have a goodbye family visit abbreviated on February 21st. The Family Preservation Project is a project that was born out of its predecessor, which was a family literacy program called Even Start. And Even Start was in operation for about 8 years and lost its federal funding. And the Department of Corrections took on funding for the program 5 years ago. And we've been operating as a Family Preservation Project since then. So we took what was sort of the best of Even Start, and we added those things that were very frustrating along the way to not have as part of the program that were much more specific to the population we were working with. So the family support piece, the family connectivity piece, the really helping women kind of examine and honor where they came from and build on the strengths and help them make some choices about what they want to carry on as family traditions and what they sort of want to leave behind.
And you talked about connecting with moms who have no one on the outside, no one bringing their children in for visits, severed all ties. These are the people that you are helping with the Family Preservation Project. Reconnect with their children, provide that support. And the superintendent of the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility did talk about the program, saying it only served a handful of people to the tune of $300,000 a year. But what are the issues around those hidden costs that we're not addressing?
So I think it's a costly mistake to not catch some of this on the front end. I think what an incarceration does, despite all the very sad things, is it creates an interruption in this space, a sort of moment in time where there are no distractions for the women. There are no men. There are no drugs. There is not laundry to do, phones to pick up, and they can pause. And they can figure out what their priorities are. And oftentimes they discover that are their kids. And so then we also have this unique opportunity to have access to their children and to put them together and to support the family that's caring for the children. And no matter how you slice that, I think that's a good investment.
And Jessica, we are asking people to contact their state legislators to urge them to fund the Family Preservation Project. Do you have any other ideas for funding this program?
I would ultimately love to see people who have stake in the success or failure of children come to the table and have a dialogue about which piece of this they may be able to support. So I think sort of cross-agency collaboration, maybe some private foundations, some, I hope what Brian's film does in its beauty is start a discussion that before, you know, may or may not have been had, and maybe now will. Hopefully, it doesn't. The responsibility isn't just on the Department of Corrections to continue this work, but maybe we identify people who are invested.
The Women in Prison Conference focus was prison reform and the need for shorter and alternative sentencing for women and the effects on children when a parent goes to prison. Also at the conference were three women currently incarcerated who were brought from the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility to share their stories and speak about the importance of family connections. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales watched the film Mothering Inside and later spoke with me about the film and ideas for funding the Family Preservation Project.
I'm such a believer in Brian Lindstrom's work. He made that amazing film about James Chassie's death called Alien Boy. And so when Brian picks a topic and says, look at this, I pay attention, and I hope a lot of other people do too. Then what this film celebrates is the ability to help people in the criminal justice system make human connections. And what bigger human connection is there than a mom to her child in ways that profoundly change the effectiveness, in my opinion, of the correction system. So I'm very interested in that. I'm proposing an incentive for businesses in Portland to hire people coming out of the criminal justice system, because I've seen that kind of program work elsewhere as well.
This is Karen James reporting for KBOO.
More community-based services are needed to prevent the mentally ill from being jailed. A new Multnomah County report surveying 80 inmates calls for a 24-hour crisis center, among other initiatives, to address this gap. At present, there is no such center in the county, though OHSU and the Legacy Health System may open a psychiatric emergency room by 2016. Mental health issues are widespread and affect 15 to 17% of people in jail nationwide. In Multnomah County, suicide is the eighth leading cause of death. Despite the assignment of mental health professionals to jails in 2014, adding suicide watch to deputy work shifts will still cost the county $900,000. It did last year. In addition to the 24-hour crisis center, the comprehensive report also calls for better communication about inmate health records, more data on the cost of housing inmates with mental illness, an exploration of the role of race and culturally specific services in this demographic, and outreach programs for people with mental illness.
And now we turn to the weekly commentary from Paul Cienfuegos for Community Rights and Dismantling Corporate Rule, produced weekly for the Tuesday Evening News.
Greetings. You're listening to the weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. Today is part two of a two-part series. Last week, I shared the remarkable story of the Envision Spokane campaign and its three attempts thus far to get their Community Bill of Rights in front of the voters. In November 2009, they garnered 24% of the vote. In November 2011, 49% of the vote. And in November 2013, when it looked quite likely that they would finally win, a large number of corporate associations and others sued to keep them off the ballot in what's referred to as a pre-election challenge. Then just 12 days ago, on January 29th, a higher court ordered the Community Bill of Rights to be placed on the ballot at an upcoming election. Check out last week's commentary for more details about the proposed law. Lindsay Schroeman Warren is the attorney who argued the winning case, and I feel blessed to have him as my very brief guest on today's commentary. Welcome, Lindsay. I'd like to start by asking you to lay out the basic case that you made to the state appellate court as to why the voters in Spokane, Washington should have the right to pass a Community Bill of Rights, which the corporate opponents have claimed is both an illegal and an unconstitutional ballot initiative.
Thank you, Paul. First, I should say that different states have different rules for the pre-election challenge. So in Washington state, the courts allow certain kinds of challenges, but don't allow other kinds of challenges. The rule is supposed to be that there is no challenge allowed for whether something is substantively unconstitutional. There are pre-election challenges allowed for procedural unconstitutionality, like failing to meet the single subject rule, for example, or for two somewhat substantive pre-election challenges. We argued these in front of the appellate court. One was that the initiative deals with administrative matters rather than legislative matters, and another is that the initiative is dealing with a power that's delegated to the elected officials of the local government rather than delegated to the local government itself. If it's delegated to the local government itself, it's available to the people. So all that is this, you know, procedural maze that you go into when a challenger tries to stop an initiative from going to the ballot. What the appellate court did was decide that it didn't even want to address those issues, because the appellate court decided that the challengers, which were a bunch of, some corporations in Spokane, some kind of Chamber of Commerce-y organizations in Spokane, and some individuals who've been strongly opposed to the Community Bill of Rights as well. Those challengers brought suit against the Community Bill of Rights, trying to stop it from getting to the ballot. The appellate court said that those challengers didn't have the right to bring suit in the first place. So the appellate court reasoned that when you're dealing with a pre-election challenge to a citizens' initiative, you're dealing with some really important fundamental issues in our legal system, one being the separation between the judicial branch, the courts, and the legislative branch, the lawmaking branch of government. Another is this right to initiative, which is a very important right that's found in either the state constitution or in state statutes, laws passed by the legislature. And then finally, there's an issue of the courts deciding things before they're ready. You don't know if you actually have to decide whether the initiative is valid or not if it never passes. And then another is the courts wanting to not issue advisory opinions, trying to not decide things before they become, before it's actually a controversy. So basically here what the court said is that only when private party challengers try to bring a pre-election challenge, like this group of corporate associations and individuals in Spokane, when they bring a challenge pre-election, they can only have standing to do that. They can only get into court to do that if they can show a clear injury in fact that would occur before the initiative goes to the ballot. If their harms are purely speculative, as in they say, well, if this passes, you know, the the sky is going to start falling, which is what these corporate challengers did, then the court has said that they can't get into court to make that argument. They don't have standing, which is a interesting legal argument in and of itself. So in our situation, we argued the substantive provision saying that the corporate challengers couldn't pass the tests, that legislative administrative distinction test or that delegation test. And the court said, we're even going to take it a step further, and we're going to say that those corporate challengers can't even get into court to argue the test. So I think it's a really important decision because it expands the powers that people have to bring initiatives in Washington State, because it limits who can challenge the initiative. And it allows for people to actually get to the ballot and voice their opinions and have that political process rather than have the court resolve the dispute of whether an initiative should be made law or not. However, for a reason I'm not aware of, the appellate court decided to not make its decision precedent. So as we go forward in the future, we will use the appellate court's argument and their reasoning to challenge standing, but we can't just point to this case and say, look, this court did it, and so this next court has to do it too. So it's, in my opinion, the judges had a particular bent in wanting to address the standing issue, and they ran with that and used some of the policy considerations that we were arguing, specifically separation of powers and the restraint of the judiciary in deciding the political questions for society. And the judges used those policies to say that there is a strong limitation on standing for who can actually show up in court.
Thank you, Lindsay, for sharing your thoughts about this big legal win concerning the Spokane Community Bill of Rights. You can find out more at envisionspokane.org. You've been listening to the weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. You can hear future commentaries every Tuesday on the KBOO Evening News and a growing number of other radio stations. I welcome your feedback. You can subscribe to my weekly podcast via iTunes or at communityrightspdx.org. You can follow me on Twitter at cienfuegospaul. You can sign up for my newsletter at paulcienfuegos.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, we are the people we've been waiting for.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Out Loud at 6 p.m. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather calls for patchy fog before 10 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with a high near 58. Wednesday night, patchy fog after 10 p.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with a low around 44. Today in history, in 1962, U.S. spy Francis Gary Powers was exchanged by the Soviet Union for their spy, Rudolf Abel. Powers was the pilot of a U-2 which had been shot down in Soviet airspace. The quote of the day is from opera singer Leontine Price. We should not have a tin cup out for something as important as the arts in this country, the richest in the world. Creative artists are always begging, but always being used when it's time to show us at our best.
It's 5:28, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Here's something I never expected to see. The CEO of an insurance giant who has an actual heart, some common sense, ethics, and the guts to go against corporate orthodoxy. Someone call Ripley's Believe It or Not. Mark Bertolini, chief of Aetna, is boosting the pay of the insurance company's lowest-paid workers to $16 an hour. Some 6,000 Aetna employees, mostly working in customer service and billing jobs, will find a boost of up to one-third in their paychecks. But wait, there's more. Aetna is also adjusting its company health plan, so about 7,000 lower-income workers can get the same health coverage they now have, but pay some $4,000 a year less for it. Can you believe it? A health insurance break from an insurance company? Like me, you're probably looking for the loophole in this deal. But lo and behold, it seems to be on the up and up. Bertolini cast it as a common-sense business move, noting that fair pay lifts morale, attracts more top-notch employees, and helps reduce the $120 million a year in costs that Aetna now shells out because of high employee turnover. While the corporation will gain all of that, there's a deeper element of egalitarian idealism in Bertolini's moves. It's about the whole social compact, says this rare CEO, who has also asked all Aetna executives to read Thomas Piketty's landmark book on the escalating price our society is paying for today's ever-widening economic inequality. This is Jim Hightower saying the most amazing thing about Bertolini's decision to invest in workers and instill even a smidgen of democratic ethics in a corporate structure is that it's considered amazing. After all, basic fairness is a core value in America that we're taught from the time we're toddlers. As Aetna's chief puts it to the CEO class, why can't private industry step forward to do this?
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, so it's your turn. Joining us now are Lisa and Adam again to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
By the way, my name is Lisa, and I have to tell you, if you're listening right now, that the guy that you just heard on the radio looks exactly like John Lennon. He looks exactly like him. It's the weirdest thing. Anyway, this is live radio. This is KBOO Community Radio. I'm here with my new pal, Adam. Adam?
Good evening.
And, you know, coming up is going to be a couple stories about police accountability here in the news, because we're looking at the run sheet. This is KBOO. This is do-it-yourself radio. This is, you are listening, and now you're going to invest in this radio station by giving us a call at 877-500-5266. If you come in person to 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, it's on the number 20 bus line, there's vehicle parking on Ankeny, then you might be able to score a slice of pizza, and you can tell me if that guy that's reading the news looks exactly like John Lennon or not. And not only that, you can sign up to be a news volunteer. All these things are unique things. If you don't know that, they're unique things. 877-500-5266. And you know, the other thing, Adam, you know what, let's talk about the things that you can give, that you can get by giving us a call.
Lots of cool stuff.
If you make a contribution of 1 hour's wage per month, okay, minimum wage in Oregon, it's roughly 10 bucks ish, a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, you can get amazing things for that. And but you still have to give us a call, 877-500-5266. If you make minimum wage, it's a little bit more than $100 a year contribution, and that is a queenly contribution to anyone. So even if you don't make very much money, you have power, dude. You do have power. 877-500-5266. The other thing I wanted to say was Jim Hightower. We just listened to Jim Hightower. My kids are in their 20s. They're in college now, but they've been listening to Jim Hightower since they were kids on KBOO, and they can do perfect Jim Hightower impressions. But what I'm telling you by saying that is that when you are a Bedrock KBOO listener, it affects your whole family. The knowledge that you gain by listening to Jim Hightower talking about Aetna Insurance Company, by the way, one of the only currently existing corporate entities in the United States that can be directly traced back to the transatlantic slave trade. And that's one of the reasons they have to be so nice to people, because they had to publicly come out and admit that they insured ships during the transatlantic slave trade. Anyway, that's just an aside. You learn things on this radio station that affect you and your family and your kids for years to come. And it's a community station. It's a family thing. We're inviting you to put some money down and join our family and support what we do here. 877-500-5266. You make $20 an hour. You're going to call us up, and you're going to make that contribution to get the awesome hoodie of awesomeness. If you come in person to make a contribution at 20 Southeast 8th Street, you will regard the hoodie of awesomeness. It's an awesome hoodie, Adam. I'm not imagining it.
Oh, yeah. It'll keep you warm, and it's not warm now. It was a little bit nicer earlier today, and we had a few people coming into the station, stopping by, showing their faces, and we hope that you also do that, too. People might be getting off work around this time. Stop by the station. We're
that's a good idea.
Kind of off the main little strip
just
here
take
on,
a,
on
just,
East Burnside, you know.
Just turn off the street and just come in and empty out your wallet
and sign
on the
up.
Table.
And like was mentioned, if you make minimum wage, or hopefully minimum wage might be $15 because they're trying to push that in a lot of places. And if you could do $15 a month, that's $180 a year. And we look at that money per year. It's not much. So we're going to get back to our programming.
877-500-5266. Give us a call.
James Howard Allen, a 74-year-old man, was shot and killed by a North Carolina police officer after police were called to check on the man's welfare following a recent heart surgery. The police say that Allen had drawn a gun on an officer after they busted into his house near midnight on Saturday, so they shot and killed him. Allen was an Army veteran, and his brother-in-law thinks the police could have avoided the whole thing and that Allen was the one who was frightened. He said that Allen probably woke up with someone breaking in and tried to protect himself. Allen's sister said she learned about her brother's death on the morning news as she was getting ready for church Sunday morning.
Several sources are reporting that a New York police officer is to be indicted in the shooting death of Akai Gurley. Gurley was killed while walking down a darkened staircase in a housing project in Brooklyn in November of last year. Officer Peter Liang had been on the force less than 2 years when the death occurred. The New York Times and New York One both report that the district attorney is expected to announce the indictment on Wednesday. It is not known yet whether the charge will be manslaughter or homicide. Kimberly Basinger, Gurley's partner, recently filed a $50 million lawsuit against the city, Officer Liang, and the NYPD over Gurley's death.
For the past 40 years, exports of crude oil have largely been banned in the United States. A public interest group, the Sightline Institute, has become aware of increasing numbers of exceptions to the ban and has filed a FOIA request with the Department of Commerce for detailed information. More specifically, they have filed with a little-known department of the Department of Commerce called the Bureau of Industry and Security, BIS for short. KBOO's Jim Thompson spoke with Eric DePlace with the Sightline Institute.
I was wondering if you could explain in 30 seconds or less what the crude oil export ban is all about.
For the last 40 years, since President Ford was signed a law into, or signed a bill into law, we have had a quote-unquote ban on crude oil exports, which means that when we drill or produce crude oil in the United States, we do not ship it abroad, refine it, and consume it domestically. That has begun to change under the Obama administration for the first time in 40 years. And what we are seeing is that quietly, out of view of the public and in secret, an obscure federal agency has begun to change the rules and issue permits to export very particular kinds of crude oil. And what Sightline Institute is trying to do is to daylight that information so that the public can see what's going on and why the rules appear to have been changed. We think it's a conversation the public deserves to participate in.
Now, I understand that the president has authority to grant exceptions.
He does. It's often referred to as a ban, but it's, of course, more complicated than that. And there are some existing exceptions and loopholes in the law. And the president can also do it for a sort of a small set of reasons. What we're seeing now is nothing like that. This is more like the federal agency sort of changing the rules on a case-by-case basis for oil companies like Shell Oil. But it's very confusing, and even the industry players and the industry press seem confused about what's changed, if anything. And, you know, again, we think that that information should be made in the full light of day.
Is there opposition to the crude oil export ban?
Yeah, there are many folks who would like to see the ban eliminated. The most important part of that faction is the oil industry itself. We are in the midst of a historic boom in oil production in this country, and most of the major oil players, not all, but most of them, would like to lift the ban so that they can make more money selling more oil abroad rather than just serving domestic marketplaces. So they've been in a full-scale lobbying assault at the congressional level, and parallel to that, they've also been approaching the executive branch and trying to change the rules that are currently on the books. There's good indication that the Obama administration is working in private consultation with industry representatives to relax the rules in a way that benefits certain kinds of oil exporters. I don't think that makes a lot of sense from a public policy perspective, but whether or not you think it's a good idea, it is consequential enough that I think most people would agree it's the sort of policy change that if we embark on it, we should do it publicly and with the public having a chance to evaluate the reasons that the oil industry gives for wanting to be able to change a 40-year-old law designed to foster energy independence.
U.S. Energy policy is not something that is often reported on in the mainstream media.
So that's principally because we don't have a coherent energy policy in this country. We have bits and pieces of conflicting and factious and partial energy policies. We've seen that sort of thing arise during the debate over the Keystone XL pipeline, over offshore drilling, over domestic use of coal and then coal exports. And so we have a very fragmented way of approaching energy use and energy policy in this country. I think, as a general matter, that's a bad thing. And with respect to oil consumption and exports in particular, I think it's a very bad thing. And it's, you know, again, I think just one more example of the ways in which we would all benefit from being able to sort of clearly evaluate our energy use comprehensively and publicly. And then, you know, hopefully we would make some better decisions about that. Than the decisions we get when you have a very little known federal agency meeting in secret with oil industry lobbyists and changing the rules.
Can you name that that agency?
It's the Bureau of Industry Security, which is a sub agency in the U.S. Department of Commerce that most people have never heard of. So, in the industry parlance, it's called BIS, and that's most of what you'll see in the reporting about this issue. But you know. It's sort of too easy, in a way, to kind of segment it off and say, oh, it's an obscure agency. Really, this belongs on the shoulders of the executive, on President Obama. He's responsible for the decisions that come from the executive branch.
I'm thinking some years back, Dick Cheney put together a completely secret energy policy.
I think there are echoes of that here, in a way. President Obama is 6 years into his presidency, and it's still hard, in my judgment, to discern a coherent view of what he thinks we should do with respect to oil. You know, he seems to be drawing a line in the sand over Keystone, yet at the same time is encouraging fracking and drilling on public lands. He's encouraging offshore drilling. And now there's evidence that, this federal agency is changing the rules that we've had in the books for 40 years. So, you know, I think it's about time that he speaks clearly and plainly about just what it is he thinks our energy policy should be. And hopefully at that point, we can have a robust public debate about what the right thing is to do with oil, because that's not a debate we're having right now.
I have been speaking with Eric DePlace, and for KBOO News, I'm Jim Thompson.
Now it's your chance to support the work of our volunteers to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. Joining us again are Adam and Lisa to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, step up to the mic, because we're stepping it up to the mic, too, and we're trying to, as Ani said last night, inform you as to your options as to how you can support KBOO. There are many ways of doing it, but
877-500-5266. I just have to scream it out. I can't stop. I'm going to get that tattooed.
Say it a little bit louder.
877-500-5266. Make a contribution of 1 hour's wage per month. How much money do you make a month? How much money? make that contribution. Make that contribution to KBOO, 877-500-5266 for that $20 a month thing. You get the awesome hoodie of awesomeness. It's a beautiful hoodie, too. It's a black hoodie, a zipper hoodie, with the new KBOO logo that's got a big red star at the top of the radio tower.
Yeah, and nothing might not be a lot, but hey, you might have enough you can give to KBOO for sure. And it's KBOO that, when it comes to talking about issues like minimum wage, issues
or
like
climate
labor,
change,
right?
Which,
climate change,
you know,
and
what?
All that.
I want to challenge people. Where was the first place you heard of climate change? Was it on KBOO? Is there some big idea or gigantic concept or amazing artist that you heard about for the very first time ever on KBOO? Now you should be calling 877-500-5266. You know, many things I heard about for the first time on KBOO. Definitely climate change is one of them.
There are a lot of things that people talk about at the station that's on the radio, and soon will probably be on the radio too, such like the legend of Nikki Rose. If you either call in now or you stop by the station, we will tell you about the legend of Nikki Rose.
But
we're
show
not
you the vid.
We're
I'll
not going to tell you right now. I mean, you have to call in to make a pledge, and or you have to stop by, and we will tell you. There's a special legend that comes from the heart of the Alberta neighborhood in Northeast Portland, the legend of Nikki Rose. But again, you're only going to know about it from KBOO, so you got to call 877-500-5266. There's somebody calling right now to hear about the legend. It's like these
we'll
kind of cutting-edge stories that you're going to hear about. But like I said, too, if it's minimum wage, if it's labor stuff, you got labor radio programs on Monday, Prison Pipelines on Monday, Tuesday. There's a Queer Boo programs Out Loud. There's the Archives. There's Right to Survive.
Wait,
Occupy
you know what's
radio.
Happening tonight on KBOO?
What's that?
The Melting Pot is having a best of. Now, let's talk about our favorite music show on these airwaves. I've always loved world beat music the best. I used to have a flamenco show. Hip-hop flamenco, my favorite.
Oh, yeah?
The best of The Melting Pot is tonight from 8 to 10. And I don't know what you're thinking, but you need to be putting your money where your mind is. 877-500-5266. Make a contribution. Support this totally fabulous programming. You know what? Maybe somebody else is doing that somewhere. I don't know who they are. And this is amazing stuff. So you need to be listening. Actually, Tuesday is my favorite day because I like the Spanish language strip. I love learning.
Yeah, me too.
And I can follow it. And it's always about something that matters. 877-500-5266. Come in person. We'll show you the video of Nikki Rose performance. Okay. We are at 20 South.